You're listening to the Salon Owners Collective podcast, where each week we share stories and expertise from business owners like you, plus experts, influencers, and Larissa's actionable steps that will transform your business and your life. And now your host, Larissa McLemon.
Do you ever wonder where has the passion gone? Larissa here from Salon Owners Collective, and I know it can feel like the salon industry is full of young new stylists who either won't stick around in our businesses or aren't even interested in the first place. It's so easy to sit around and blame them for not wanting to work for you. But after a while, I think we have to ask ourselves, what could we be doing better? Now, today I'm talking with Alan Austin Smith. Alan is a salon owner turned author, motivational speaker, whose company is The Fantastic Hairdresser. I did another interview with him earlier. Go and check it out. And our chat is all about why being good simply isn't enough anymore. You need to be fantastic. As a salon owner, managing your staff can be so frustrating. Like, I totally get it. Not to mention attracting new team members and then keeping them around. It feels like they just don't have the same passion that you did when you were starting off. Am I right? Alan and I chat about why it's actually your opportunity as a salon owner and boss to spark a passion within your team and how to engage them so that they fall in love with the industry and your salon, just like you did back in the day. There's so much competition, and I'm not just talking about other salons, really. I'm talking about competition for everyone's attention. Capturing the attention of young stylists can feel super tricky when competing against things like Game of Thrones, Instagram, the Avengers. But it is so, so necessary if you want staff who are passionate and are going to stick around. Essentially, it's time to start thinking about what you can do better. Alan gives some super helpful tips on how to attract and keep young stylists on board and how to change people's minds around the whole salon industry. Let's jump into my awesome chat with Alan. Alan, thank you so much for coming back to the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Really happy to have you back.
Fab to be back. I'm pleased everybody enjoyed it so much last time. So here we go again.
I was just saying before we pushed record that your episode was one of the most commented on episodes. So I felt it was my duty to bring you back on the podcast. So thank you.
Oh, that's cool. That's lovely. Thank you very much.
All right. So for those that don't know you, will you tell us where you are in the world? What do you do and how did you get to be doing just that?
Okay. Well, I'll try and make it as brief as possible. I'm in London right now. I do spend my life on planes and airports and hotels traveling around the world. But right now I'm back. I'm in my hometown of London. And the Fantastic Hairdresser is... effectively, it's 30 years old, believe it or not. And we started the Fantastic Hairdresser. I started it 30 years ago. I'm the founder of it. And of course, the book of the same name is one of the best-selling books in the salon industry worldwide now. We run a variety of different education programs based around what I call the 50% rule. It's very simple. It's our foundation stone. I believe that 50% of what makes someone fantastic at what they do, not just good, good's not enough anymore. 50% of what makes someone fantastic at their job has got nothing to do with their job. And that applies to any job, but certainly as far as we're concerned in this industry, in the salon industry, whether it's hair, whether it's beauty, same principle. And if we're just coming at it from a hair perspective, you know, I really believe that 50% of what makes a fantastic hairdresser has got nothing to do with a pair of scissors and a tint brush. By the way, 50% has, and for those people who don't know my history, I was a hairdresser. I started my career at Sassoon's. I trained at Sassoon's, worked there. I was then creative director for Glenbey in London, and then spent time at L'Oreal. So I know this industry inside out, so even before the Fantastic Hairdresser. And so I'm not coming from an outsider point of view saying it doesn't matter what you do with a pair of scissors. No, of course it matters. I'm just simply saying 50% of what makes you a fantastic hairdresser is what you do with your comb and scissors, your tint brush. But the other 50% is what I call the other stuff. Communication skills, motivation, customer service, confidence, big issue. People know what to do, but they don't always have the confidence to do it. All of those things. And of course, when we start talking about business, of course, it's all the business skills that go with the amazing work we do in the salon that makes a difference. That ultimately is what the Fantastic Hairdresser is about. We don't teach hair anymore. What we're all about is what I call the other stuff, the other 50%, which, you know, when you take what I mean by fantastic, you know, I think someone can be a wizard with a pair of scissors. But if they haven't got the communication skills, if they haven't got the confidence, if they haven't got the self-motivation, the customer service, et cetera, then to me, they're just a good hairdresser. Mm. Someone who is fantastic at what they do has got to have both sets of skills. And I think and one of the interesting things for me, and I can't remember if I talked about this last time, so I'll be brief. Mm. Almost everybody in the industry agrees with me on this. And then I say, so if you agree that 50% of what makes a fantastic hairdresser is all the other stuff, then I think we've got a question for the industry, which is, are we actually only teaching people to do half their job?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because we're very good at teaching a young person how to cut hair, color hair. But then we end up with someone who's graduated but hasn't always got the skills to build a column and to make money for themselves and for their boss. Yeah, you can't, I say, look, you can't nod at me when I say it's 50% and go, yeah, you're right. And then not look at your training program and say, actually, are we really doing 50-50 or are we doing the occasional customer service training, etc.? To me, it's very simple. If you want a fantastic hairdresser, we've got to train them in everything they need to do to be fantastic, not just how to do hair.
Yeah, I really agree with you. And I think as business owners, sometimes we forget that that's part of our responsibility to do that. Because it doesn't happen in the training colleges, so it must happen. And we are an industry full of young people, and that's one of the reasons that I wanted to bring you on today, was to talk about exactly that, because one of the challenges is retention of young people. They drop out quickly or they move on, but there's a rising tide of change within the industry, and I really would like your perspective on it. What are your thoughts on the changes that are happening with, I guess, the younger generation, because we are a young industry typically?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly experiencing here in the UK, and I'm seeing it everywhere. There's two challenges for me that the industry faces. One is attracting young people in, mm-hmm. and then the other is keeping them within your salon environment and keeping them within the industry even. And I think those are the issues. And the fact is that although obviously today it's very different in terms of, females working in the industry, obviously a lot of women will come back to work after having children and so on today. It's a very different world. But the fact is, it is still a female-orientated industry. And therefore, there will always be, and it's a young industry, and so there will always be the need for young people coming through underneath. And it does concern me, it does worry me, that if we don't do something, and something quite radical, I believe, then if we keep having this sort of lack of young people wanting to come into the industry and engage with the industry, and I guess also the right people coming into the industry, then if we sort of go forward 5-10, where are the stylists? Where are the stylists going to be? And do you know Visible Changes, Larissa, in America, in Texas, John McCormack?
No, I don't. I'm not aware of them.
Amazing business, incredible business. And he's an amazing man, a very, very astute businessman. And I always remember him asking me a question. He said, what is the most critical factor, the single most critical factor for success in the salon industry? And the answer was the team. And he said, the reason why is because all the other things that are important, customer service, profit, your reputation, the environment in the salon, the atmosphere, et cetera, all those things depend on the team. And he said, so ultimately, the critical factor is the team. And I said, oh, yeah, I agree. And he looked at me and said, you don't get it. And I said, yeah, I do. He said, no, you don't. He said, see, I've got a restaurant. And he said, and if a chef walks out of my restaurant, he said, you know what I do? I get on the phone to an agency. I've got a chef in that restaurant within an hour. He said, you try doing that in an hour. He said, the team's critical. We can't put money in the till without the team. And he said, that's why it's so critical. And that when, if you accept that and take that on board and then say, okay, so what if in 5-10 years time, we can't find enough stylists to actually do the clients who want their hair done? We've got problems.
Absolutely.
yeah. And I really do, you know, I tend to, I'm always looking ahead. I'm always 5-10 years ahead in my brain. I look at things, I look in the industry, and I'm always doing that. And I'm looking 5-10 years ahead and thinking, if we don't take some action now, I think we've got some huge issues. So let me explain where I feel. Yeah, by the way, I'm not saying I'm right on this. I think we've just got to start thinking differently. For me, I can go back about 25 years here. I can't speak for what was happening your side of the world. But about 25 years ago, we were having a major problem with mobile hairdressing. Now, let me explain that. Nothing wrong with mobile hairdressers. Nothing wrong with home hairdressing. There's always going to be a market for it. But the problem was that the salon client was choosing to have their hair cut in the kitchen. And that I found fascinating, because to me, what that meant was, what's going wrong in your salon? Because if it's not just price, in other words, what I'm saying is that someone might be making that choice for price, but the client who's actually happy to spend salon prices, why would you have your hair cut in the kitchen? And that was really puzzling me. And that was 25 years ago. And I was talking to a lot of people and saying, guys, I think we've got to completely change the salon experience. And of course, and it wasn't just me who drove that, by the way, I'm not taking credit for it, but that's what we did. We stopped just cutting someone's hair, and it became a salon experience. And it was just as important what the gorgeousness of the salon and the relaxation and how you felt, and all those things, it became just as important. And the industry at a certain level changed massively. And yes, we need to do grey hair, but we all understand at a certain level now, we've got to give customer service, we've got to give a great experience, and so on. And I think it was a radical change in the industry. A lot of the stuff that we look at today, well, it wasn't like that 20 years ago. A cup of coffee was a, chipped mug, that you got for Easter. I remember the big tin of coffee and all the mugs around it. All the stuff that we have today in terms of nice coffee and looking after the client and customer service, it wasn't like that. But all of that now is the norm, and it's because we've changed the experience. And that's what happened. Right. That's the history of that. What I'm actually saying, I think we've now got to do the same thing with the way we recruit, the way we attract people into the industry, and the way we train and keep young people. Because I think, if we really press the pause button, I think there's not a lot different happening in salons sometimes from when I was being trained. And I'm 58 years old now. And I look at some of the things, and I think, you know what? If we're struggling to attract young people into the industry, if we're struggling to keep them, it's no good us sitting around moaning about it. We've got to do something different. You see, one of the things that people keep saying to me today is passion, Alan. Where's the passion? They're not passionate anymore. We used to talk about hair. We used to, someone's doing a show and it's like, oh, really? When is it? Oh, that's my yoga night or whatever. I keep hearing that type of thing. Where's the passion gone, Alan? Okay, this is what I say to people. Why do you want your team to be passionate? People look at me rather strangely. I say, no, seriously, it's a serious question. Why do you want them to be passionate? And then eventually what people start to say is, well, I want them to engage with what we're doing here, to be committed, to engage in everything we're doing in the salon. And I said, absolutely. And that's where we're going wrong. We've got it the wrong way round. In other words, we want people to be passionate so that they'll engage. That's the wrong way round. Engaged people become passionate. And it's like what's happening is that we're sitting around waiting for them to be passionate, almost demanding that they're passionate, wondering why they're not passionate. What's another word for passion, Larissa? Give me another word for passion in life, not in our industry, just in life. What's passion?
Oh, golly.
Really basic.
Well, it's love.
Exactly. It's love. So if you think about love now, and you think about love in your life, do you demand love from people? Do you expect love from people?
Well, I don't know that we've all got it sorted out in our home lives anyway, but I 100% agree that you've got to give love to get love. You don't get love and then give love.
No, absolutely. But more importantly, here's a term that everybody recognizes. We fall in love.
Yes.
And we fall in love with someone, if we're going to take that environment, that metaphor, we fall in love with someone who is engaging us.
Yes.
That we enjoy being with, that we are enjoying their space, their time, and everything else. And we fall in love with someone. And so that's passion. So what I'm saying to salon owners and salons is like, look, you want your team to be passionate, but what are you doing to make them fall in love with you? And now the old attitude is, well, they should be. I'm paying them. They should be, you know. And it's like, yeah, that's how it used to be. I also think we're forgetting the competition. You know, we've got competition today for that passion. You know, they're not just going to fall in love with us. There's plenty of other environments for them to fall in love. You see, when I was a passionate young hairdresser, do you know my choices of an evening? 4 channels and the pub.
That's right.
That's what I had. And you know what? I loved spending time in the pub with my colleagues talking about hair. Or I loved staying behind after work with a dolly head, trying new things. But you see, I didn't have Game of Thrones to rush home for. You know, I didn't have an Xbox. I didn't have Tinder. I didn't have, you know, and you know what? If I'm honest, you know, maybe if I'd have had Tinder, would I have been sitting in the salon? I don't know. Kind of at home playing with Tinder, and so on. And I think we've got this competition today that young people, their passion. And you know, I mentioned yoga class earlier. I didn't even know what a yoga class was when I was 18, 19. And so there's basically this competition for their passion. But I don't think we're even competing. I think we're sort of sitting there expecting it. It's like, why aren't you passionate? Why aren't you doing this? And I'm saying, well, what are you doing to make them passionate? What are you doing to engage your team to really make them passionate? So let me give you a couple of examples of what I mean. It was the British Hairdresser of the Year Awards a few years ago. And it was when we had our academy with the salon in it. We've moved since then. But I was going that night, and I walked through the salon in my DJ on my way to the awards. And the girls in the salon were taking the piss out of me with being in my dinner jacket. They go, where are you going? Where are you off to? And I got in the car and I thought, I don't believe it. Even my own team. You see, my point is that I was in the film industry and I was in Hollywood and I was in a dinner jacket on the night of the Oscars, I don't think any of my staff would have any, they'd all be absolutely clear where I was going.
Mm.
You know? And I thought, my own team are asking me where I'm going on British Hairdressing Awards night. They're not going, oh, are you going? They're going, where are you going? And I sat there and I went through the normal salon owner emotion. Oh, for God's sake, bloody hell, what's the matter with them? Oh, my God. You know, kids today, etc. What I've learned is press the pause button after that, what I call appropriate human response, and then think, hang on, wait a minute. Who does it benefit that they're engaged with the British Hairdressing Awards? Well, ultimately them, of course, but actually me. I want them to be engaged. I want them to be excited about it. I want them to be following it, to see who's winning, to what's happening. I want them involved in the industry and engaged in the industry. And the more passionate they are, the more likely they're going to stay in the industry, stay working with me, and so on. So what we did next year was we had a hat with all the names from all the British Hairdressing Award nominees. And everybody pulled out a name, and that was your nominee. So some people got Achim Kanizi, some people got Mark Hayes, someone else got Brynn Young, someone else got Errol Douglas. And so they had all these names, and it was like, right, that's your nominee. I want you to go away and find out everything possible you possibly can about Errol Douglas. And then I want you to come back and sit in a team meeting, and you're going to tell us why you think he should win. And
it is
then of course
so cool, by the way.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is I'm engaging them,
yes,
so that they will be passionate.
Yes.
And so what happens is when we come to the awards, they're following it on Twitter. they're following it all the way through on Twitter and going, okay, wow, you know. And then the next morning we had a silly little, because you do this in this industry, we had a little bit of fun and a bit of laugh. We gave an egg cup to the person who won.
Yeah. You know,
just had a bit of fun with it. But the thing is that it engages, we started Icon Thursdays. You know, Icon Thursdays were what we would do. We did it once a month on a Thursday, and it would be, right, your icon this month is Eugene Solomon. Okay, all right, Eugene Solomon. And of course, some people go, who's Eugene Solomon? So that's for you to find out. You've got a month. And I want you to learn and find out as much as you can about Eugene. But this is what I want you to do. I want you to come in a month's time to the next Icon Thursday with four images that you've chosen. They can just be on your phone. Three that you love from Eugene. Three images that you love. And one that you didn't like particularly. See, I always think creatively, I think it's just as interesting where you didn't like something.
Sure.
And so three that you loved, one that you didn't. And then they would all come and we'd all be sitting around going, okay, well, this is what I chose. This is what I chose. Some people say, my God, I can't believe his work and what he's done and so on. And things like that. And then it would be, oh, this is the one I didn't like. And then someone else would go, oh, I like that one. And all of a sudden what we were recreating was what we used to do in the pub. And talking about hair and disagreeing and I like that or I don't like that and so on. And so what I'm trying to say is that we were creating that passion, but I took the responsibility on. It was my responsibility to engage them.
Yeah.
We would do silly little things like I would say, okay, we had quite a big building when the salon was there, and it was from the salon you had to sort of go down a corridor upstairs and so on to get to my office. There was just one day I walked through the salon, it wasn't very busy, and they were all sort of around, and I went, the first person to knock on my door and tell me how many Vogue covers Sam McKnight has had gets 20 quid. And so all of a sudden they're on their phones looking to see how many Vogue covers is 20. Do you understand? But I think I'm trying to explain that's the difference for me of thinking I want them to be passionate. I need to engage them rather than sitting in the pub or with my head in my hands going, what's the matter with them? Why aren't they passionate? It's my benefit in my business for them to be passionate. So I've got to start to take the responsibility on to engage them, remembering that I've got competition. Got to be. And frankly, I obviously it's current right now, but if my competition is Game of Thrones, well, I've got to work bloody hard.
Yeah.
To keep these guys engaged and passionate. So what I'm trying to say is that I think that's an issue in terms of when we're keeping people, in terms of, I think when someone is going to work, even though it's a lovely salon and you're a lovely boss and it's a nice team, but effectively they're going to work doing hair, if we're not careful, it becomes a job. And the moment it just becomes a job, then I'm going to go where the wages are best. And then, of course, what's happening with rent-a-chair and self-employed, then, well, I might as well go there. You see, in the old days, again, I don't know, again, your side of the world, if this was relevant, but the argument against going self-employed was what the benefit you got from working in the salon, the training, the shows, the extracurricular activities, if you like. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they're not that bothered about that anymore. So I might as well go self-employed and earn the money. What we've got to do is make them bothered about it by engaging them, by getting them passionate, and then realizing that when they, maybe even if they go and then have to come back because they go and they realize I'm not passionate about my craft anymore. And if they're not passionate about their craft, then they're going to want to come back. I think that's something that we've already got to grasp hold of. In terms of attracting young people into the business, well, I really think we've got to make some changes there. I've already intimated about the training they get when they're in, but I think we've got to. I tend to find this around the world. You'll know yourself whether it's relevant where you are, but this issue of getting parents and teachers to understand that this industry is a great industry and it's a great job. I call it the just a hairdresser syndrome, which we've probably all experienced at different times. Mm. Oh, a hairdresser. We know it's a great job. We know you can earn very good money. We know it's creative. We know that it's the skills that you need, the communication, what a young person learns in this industry is amazing, but we're not selling it. We're not selling it in the same way. We're just not on the pitch. We're not competing. We're not competing with universities. We're not competing with corporate world. We're not competing with coffee shops. We're not competing. We're not out there. It was quite interesting. We had a whole day on this. It was our business summit last year. And there was 150 salons attending this business summit. And you know what I did? They had no idea. Everybody knew the day was going to be about what needs to change. I actually employed 6 people for a few days, young people, ranging from 17 to 20. And none of them had made a decision about their career yet. And they were all the type of people that would do well in the salon industry. They all had creativity. They all had some get up and go, but they just hadn't decided what they wanted to do yet. See, there's no problem getting the kid who's been dreaming of being a hairdresser since they were 7 years old into the industry. That's not a problem, but that's always going to be the minority. It's the people like me who fell into it and then fell in love with it that we need. And for me, what happened is I got these kids, and I paid them. I just paid them a few quid, 50 quid or whatever, I can't remember. And I said, look, this is what I want you to do. Here are 150 websites, and I want you to go through every website. I'm going to pay you. I want you to go through every website, and I want you to do 2 things. Number one, I want you to tell me if you can find easily anywhere on that website what the benefits of working in the salon industry and having a job in this salon. Secondly, if you do find that anywhere, did it excite you and inspire you and make you think, I want to be a hairdresser and I want to work for this company? Okay, 150 salons. They found 12 that had a recruitment area on their website. Of those 12, only 2 they felt were exciting.
Yeah.
The others were almost, would you like to come and work here? type of thing.
Yeah.
But 2 out of 150. And by the way, our customers are top end customers. Now, can you imagine me presenting that in front of those 150 salons?
It's so devastating. It's so devastating.
Bearing in mind it was them sitting in the audience.
Yes.
And so on. And it's like, we're not competing. We're not competing. Now, there's a company here called Pret a Manger, and they're a coffee shop, effectively. And I then showed a video, a recruitment video, of what they call their school leaver program. And I showed this amazing video from Pret, and I said, that's who you're competing against, a coffee shop. Because, and at the end of that video, people were joking, but some not joking. This is salon owners almost going, well, I want to work there, and so on. For me, I think what this industry is sometimes really good at, and I'm going to be a bit harsh here, but I'm sorry, I think it's true. What this industry is very good at is sitting around in bars moaning about what's not right.
Mm.
Ain't going to change a thing. We've got to start doing things differently, and we've got to start looking around and saying, okay, how am I recruiting? What are we doing? I'm very critical of some of the product companies and in terms of some of the fellowships and federations and things like that. I'm saying, look, guys, we have got to start doing stuff to say to young people, this is an amazing industry. Now, I'm going to give someone a plug here, Sally Brooks. Sally Brooks, British Hairdresser of the Year, the last 2 years. And you know what? I think I might not be 100% right here, so apologies if I'm wrong, but I can't think of another British Hairdresser of the Year who has used their position to benefit the industry. Because Sally has made a film called Journey to My Destination. Mm-hmm. And it's effectively about this industry and about what an amazing industry it is to be in. And it's on Amazon Prime here. It's a DVD as well, you can get it. But basically, that is an amazing film. And we need more of that. We need more of saying, this is incredible industry. Now, by the way, this day and age, you know, with sort of the YouTube generation, it doesn't have to be what Sally's done. She's made a feature film effectively. It doesn't need to be that. You know, you interview your kids. You know, sit down with that 18, 19-year-old and do a quick interview. That's the stuff that should be on social media. That's the stuff that should be on our websites and so on. Letting people know that this is a great industry to work in and to learn and everything else, and to get parents to understand it. You know, that's really some of the things we've got to start thinking differently on. But we've also got to start thinking differently about the way we bring people into the industry. We've got this old-fashioned attitude. By the way, what I love about this stuff when I talk about it, if anybody's listening to this and disagreeing and thinking, no, we're not like that, that's brilliant. I love it if you disagree with me, because that means you're doing it great. Yeah. But I think, there's almost, you know what, sometimes it almost feels like a vengeance. So, well, I had to go through it, so will you. You know?
Yes, I know this, yeah. The sentiment, yeah. Yes.
And it's like, this is a different generation. And it's, you know, think of just social media. Do you have work experience? Do you have something like that, yeah, where school, sure, kids come in and maybe spend a couple of weeks in the salon?
Yep.
Work experience, right. So there's a great example. What do we do with those work experience kids?
I know what happens to those poor kids. They get a rough time. Sweep the floor. Yeah,
because it's
boring as hell.
And it's almost like, I'll show you what work is. but we got an opportunity for a week or whatever it is, 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks here. It's an amazing PR job. What if we send that kid back to school going, that was amazing? Even if they don't want to be a hairdresser, they'll be saying it's amazing. You see, what we've got to understand is that after their first day in your salon, the work experience, they're on social media that night. They're on WhatsApp. And they're on their WhatsApp group with their mates who are all stunned their first day. And it's going, what did you do? What did you do? And that person in that salon is going to be, I just stood around all day and made coffee and swept up. And yeah, that was it.
So boring.
Boring. And that's going out now on social media.
Yeah.
And that's going out to other people going, God, that sounds shit. That sounds horrible.
It's actually going out on social media while they're sweeping up and making the coffee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so on. And so all of a sudden there's this rap going out that, you know, it's boring, it's no fun. And the thing is that this is such an exciting industry, such a creative industry. But right from that moment, they're coming into the industry and we're making, I'm not saying they shouldn't learn the hard way. I'm not saying they shouldn't clean and they shouldn't do the, but it's like, why can't we make it? This is a fun, exciting, creative, energetic industry. And now think about what we do to those kids when they come in for the first few months. We bore the bloody hell out of them.
Why do you think this is? Like, for me, I think somewhere along the line, the salon owner lost their confidence and forgot how to have fun, and it all got really hard. And that hardness now filters down to the team culture.
I agree.
Don't you think, yeah, like you said confidence right at the beginning, and I really agree that confidence has got a lot to answer for, because it stops us at our tracks from doing the things that we know we could, should, would. It stops us from being creative. It stops us from having the fun. When is it? When do we lose our confidence?
Yeah, I think some of it. This is another thing I talk about sometimes, is that it's difficult to do this without a visual in front of me. But if you imagine like a pH chart, and if you put on one end of it what I call the bastard boss, and then on the other end of it, you put the team leader. And we moved away from the bastard boss for good reasons, all the way over to the team leader. Actually, maybe a better visual would be a seesaw.
Right.
Because actually where we need to be is right in the middle. When I say, when you're right in the middle, you're sort of one step away from, hey, you're out of order. You're also one step away from, that was brilliant, I'll support you, motivation, etc. What I think happened was, and not just in our industry, it's happened everywhere, I think it's even happened in parenting, is that from Victorian value, is that we've gone so far the other way that actually the boss isn't the boss anymore.
Yeah.
And what happens is the boss actually has lost confidence to manage.
Yeah.
And worried about people leaving, worried, almost like on eggshells, and so on. And I think we've just gone too far. The pendulum swung too far. And don't get me wrong, I'm an absolute total supporter of team, of motivation, of praise, of all those things. But I think parenting is actually quite a good example. If your 15-year-old goes to their first party and you say you've got to be back at 10 and they come back at 11 and you don't do anything about it, well, you've got a few years of hell coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what you do is you go, hey, and you pull them up on it. But it's almost like what's happening is that, but you still love them, but you've got that firmness and that discipline. But if you just let the kids run all over you and make their own decision, whatever, you've got hell. And I think that's starting to happen in the workplace. And it's like edging back to that middle. And I think that's perhaps where some of that confidence went in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing on the industry that I've been talking about, and I'm going to be very straight here, I really don't know whether this is an answer. However, I will say a few salons have taken it on board and found that it has made a bit of a difference. But I really don't know yet. It's too early to know whether what I'm talking about here is going to make a difference. But I've also been saying, look, we need to educate parents and teachers and get kids and so on thinking about the industry differently. Now, we've been trying to do that as long as I've been in this industry. And I think one of my favorite quotes, as I think we talked about it last time, is, is it working? Is what you're doing working? And if the answer is no, well, then we've got to do something different. And I think we can quite clearly say it's not working, everything we've been doing. So for me, I've just been wondering whether there's a different positioning that maybe makes it sound a bit different, a bit more exciting. I'll come back to something I said earlier. We know when you're in this business, it's fab. It's great. That's not the challenge. The challenge is getting people to think, to consider it as a career. So I've actually been talking to people about being a hairdresser in the fashion industry. You see, we're in the fashion industry. We've always been in the fashion industry. Hair, beauty, fashion, all connected. Your most basic photo shoot, you would think about makeup, you would think about clothes. We're in the fashion business. Now, I just wonder whether the fashion business is a bit sexier, a bit more interesting. You see, if you say, for example, the film industry, well, how many different jobs could you, could you be in the film industry and be doing many different things? You might be a camera person, you might be a director, you might be whatever. And I just wonder whether we should be starting to just pitch ourselves slightly differently as becoming a hairdresser in the fashion industry. Work in the fashion industry as a hairdresser. Mm. It maybe just has a different feel. It maybe just sets it slightly differently. It was quite interesting, actually, that came from social media training. Because I'm sometimes quite critical when I'm teaching social media that a lot of salons are just doing the same stuff all the time. And they say, look, I hear what you're saying, Alan, but you have to keep posting and we run out of things to post. I said, that's because you've narrowed your mindset into hair. When you understand that a hairdressing salon's doorway is the doorway for the average woman on the street into beauty, fashion, and hair, then your social media feed can be, you've got amazing breadth there. You can do so many different things. But it's understanding. But if we just think hair, then we're sort of stuck with doing the backs of people's heads before and afters.
Amen. No more backs of heads. Backs of heads.
It's driving me absolutely insane. I sort of joke about it. I say, look, hey, we're really good at backs. Not so good at fronts, sorry, but we're really good at backs.
And we don't have happy smiling customers.
Yeah, I know why it's done. I know why it happens. I know the client doesn't want to pay. I understand all that. I'm just simply saying it's just one after the other, after the other, after the other. And it's like, why is that happening? And people say, well, because I don't know what else to do. Open your mind, be broader, and really all of a sudden, there's so many things you could be doing. And adding in loads of different things. When you consider yourself part of the fashion industry and part of the beauty industry, not just the hairdressing industry. And that's where I was teaching that. And I thought, you know what, maybe actually that repositioning may just help as a PR, if you like, as a marketing tool with the industry to get people to look at us differently. Who knows? I don't know. My point is this. I think we're struggling to get young people into the industry. We're struggling to keep them. I said it just now. Is it working? Is what we're doing working? No. Well, you know, why would you keep doing the same stuff if it's not working? I think we've got to have a radical shakeup. And this, now I'm going to go to the beginning of my story. Like we did 25 years ago when we realized the clients weren't staying. And we realized we couldn't retain clients. And we said, wait a minute, we've got to do something different. And we did, and it worked. I think we've got to do the same thing with recruitment and retention. I think we've got to start looking at different ways to attract people into the industry. We've got to make it exciting, fun, creative, energetic. You know, when you get that kid in for that week or 2 weeks work experience, blow them away. You know, seriously, set them down. Go and look at one of the Chanel, Karl Lagerfeld shows. This is what I mean about the fashion industry. Now, Karl Lagerfeld shows, his shows were, and I just hope losing him, we don't lose the what he used to do with the shows as well, because his shows, his runway shows weren't runway shows. He takes over a space and turns it into something. He creates a casino. He creates a forest. He creates a beach. Mm-hmm. He creates all these amazing things, but they're inside. It's still a runway show, but he does it so creatively. And of course, Sam at Night does all the hair with Karl Lagerfeld and the Chanel shows. And if you haven't already, I'm speaking now directly to whoever's listening to this, go onto YouTube, go onto the Chanel site, go onto YouTube and watch some of those shows. Because if you're at all creative, if you like fashion, if you like hair, you will love them. Absolutely love them. Now, but we should be showing that to that 17, 18-year-old, 16-year-old. We should be saying, okay, I'm going to show you something, right? Now, I'll take the casino show. Every model has got a Sassoon-graduated bob. Now, they're all probably most in the wigs. And some of them, frankly, a bit too harsh. Some of them look stunning. I think it's really interesting to actually sit someone down and say, watch this, yeah? And then, having watched it, say, okay, what did you like? What didn't you like? No right answers, no wrong answers. What did you like? What didn't you like? What do you think was great? What did you not think was great? And then let's look at the hair. Now, let me tell you about Sam at Night. Introduce them to Sam at Night. And then say, why do you think they made that decision about everybody having a graduated bob? What do you think they were trying to achieve? And there's no right answer, of course, but to get people thinking about it. And then to say, all right, what did you like? Which one did you like? Which one did you not like? You see, that one's lovely. That one's a bit ugly, etc. What did you like? What did you not like? And just get them a non-hairdresser at this point. Just interesting, asking questions, saying things, pointing things out, etc. I think maybe tonight that might be a different WhatsApp message.
Yeah. And in fact, it takes the pressure off us as business owners to have to be constantly coming up with the answers, because actually what you're doing is you're just asking the questions and you're letting their minds evolve and develop and decide what they like and don't like. And we forget that actually, because I think somehow we got into this mode that we have to fix everything and solve everything, and that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, all that happens is they stand back and watch you.
Yes.
And then as a salon owner, you're like, does anybody else? They actually do want to help and they want to be involved. Human beings want to be engaged.
Yes.
I've been joking about Game of Thrones and all the different things, but that's engagement, and that's what it is. The new Avengers film, everybody wants to see it because that's engagement. Because what's happening is they're engaging people. They're going, oh, you've got to watch this. And so all these things are happening. Human beings love being engaged, but you've got to put some effort in. Yeah. You know, Game of Thrones, it doesn't matter how good it is. If they just sort of say, oh, there's a TV program on called Game of Thrones, they've got to market it. They've got to sell it. They've got to make it. But we've got to do the same with our team. And I know there's people listening to me out there. I know there will be people listening going, oh, really? Why have I got to do that? Because it's in your benefit ultimately.
Yes.
It benefits you ultimately in your business. And you can't expect it. And I'll come back to something I said earlier. People fall in love. You can't expect people to love you. They fall in love. And they fall in love because you engage, because you flirt, because you become attractive to them. It's no different in business. You've got to become attractive. You've got to flirt with them. You've got to engage them. And then they'll fall in love with you and this industry. And if you do that, you have a chance. I think we've really got to throw the cards up in the air and let them fall and say, you know what? We've got to do some stuff differently from the moment a youngster walks into that salon and so on. I'm going to finish with an interesting story. I told you about our business summit last year. There was a lady I purposely had there as a speaker. And interestingly, she was one of the ones that the kids picked out that I paid to look at their websites. And it's a lady called Sally Montague. I think she's got 5 or 6 salons, I'm not sure, in the Midlands here. Now, a year before, she, from 6 salons, and she's got a very good brand, she's very well known in the area, very, very classy brand, well known. She had one applicant for a trainee. One. That was it. Wow. She said, it's never been that bad. And she just thought, what on earth is going on? What do I do? And then what she did, she said, well, you know what? What we're doing isn't working, in the words of Alison Smith. So let's throw the cards up in the air. And frankly, we only got one applicant. So how much worse can it be? Let's take some risks. Now, by the way, I'm not suggesting these are the answers, but they worked for her. You know the first thing she did? She actually increased the level of qualification from school. She actually started by, you need to have achieved this, this, and this before you could work here. Instead of what we've been doing for the last few years is dumbing it down, she actually said, and that was brave. And that was like, we won't even consider you unless you've got English, maths, et cetera, at this level. She decided the issue was parents. She started targeting parents. She started having open evenings for parents, not for kids, but for parents, showing what a career this is, showing what a hairdresser learns, not just hair. Because you know what? Again, here's a question directly to any parents listening to me. Forget being a hairdresser for a second. Wouldn't you want your child to learn this amazing communication skills, confidence, motivation, creativity that someone learns in this industry? I would. I want my kids to learn those skills. Where are they going to learn that stuff? You know, they'll learn that stuff in a creative environment, in a communication environment, in a customer service environment. You know, forget hairdressing for a second. You know, that environment. And so, you know, what she started doing was selling that stuff, saying, you know, school actually in many cases is letting your children down. They're teaching them maths and English, but they're not teaching them how to communicate in the modern day. And that's even more important today in a world where they communicate by texting and WhatsApp and so on. So we will teach them that. We will give them those skills. And she started to operate very, very differently and market herself completely differently. I haven't got time here to tell you everything, but she marketed herself differently. Right, here we go. A year later, 350 applicants.
Wow, that is so cool.
And from those 350, she chose 15. And you know what she did? She got the local paper and local press and radio involved in that, in the 15, and she made it a massive deal. These 15 people have managed to get an apprenticeship at Sally Montague. And, you know, wow, 350 people wanted this. These 15 have got it. And she used social media. They were all on their first day and they were getting their packs and they were doing all this thing. She was hitting it all out on social media and how exciting they were and everything else. She made a massive thing. So what do you think happened next year? The year after? It's easy. She made these massive changes. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that the specific changes she made will work for everybody, but my point is this. She didn't just carry on doing what wasn't working. She tried something different.
And, I love that.
No.
Let you finish.
No, that was it. That was it.
It's a bit sort of like American Idol style, you know. You actually have to interview, and it's a bit of a public platform, and you get in or you don't, and you get your pack and you're in. And good on her, because she not only, you know, threw the cards in the air, she stepped out, stepped into her confidence and did something different. I think that is so cool.
But the interesting thing is, as she said, frankly, I couldn't do much worse.
No, yeah. That's right. She had nothing to lose.
She had nothing to lose. So let's try something different. You know, you mentioned sort of Idol and things like that. They all had to send in, you had to send in a video of yourself and talking about yourself and whatever. And it was like limited, you know, 3-minute video or whatever. You know, that's how it works now. My wife, she got to the final stages of getting onto a program we have here called The Island. And, you know, she had to do this video and send the video in. And then she did a telephone interview before she went in for the final stuff and things like that. And Sally did the whole thing like that, like it was a TV show.
Yeah.
Understanding a different generation, they wanted exciting. And then when they started, it was exciting, and they were doing exciting things. They weren't just standing around staring into space and then saying, right, can you unblock that sink and clean those skirting boards with a toothbrush?
That's right.
You know, and again, I know there'll be people listening to this going, yeah, but that's we're mollycoddling them and whatever. It's like, yeah, look, fine, carry on, but you won't have any staff.
Yeah, that's right. They're already mollycoddling. So, yeah. So, you know, you've got to tune in or get out, really, I guess.
Yeah.
Alan, you're a business owner yourself. What is a quote or a mantra or something that you live by that we must pay attention to?
I kind of touched on it, I suppose. If you're talking, I mean, I've got millions of the bloody things because I spend my life talking in front of audiences, as you know, and I've got quotes coming out of my backside. But if there's one that I live by, it has to be, if you want change, change something. It's what we've been talking about, I guess. That's my one. If you want change, you know what? I love that. It's profound in its simplicity.
Yes.
If you want change, change something. And so many people want change but carry on doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. I want to stop smoking, but I'm going to continue putting cigarettes in my mouth and lighting them. I want to lose weight, but I'm going to carry on stuffing my gob with food. I want to get fit, so I'm going to join a gym but not go. People want change, but they don't do anything different.
Yep.
If you want change, you've got to change something. That probably is the one I live by the most.
Yeah. Okay. What about a book, a webinar, a resource, or someone to follow that we all missed, that's been, you know, instrumental for you, that we should pay attention to?
Oh, again, as you know, I'm a mad learner. I'm learning all the time. I'll tell you a book I read a couple of months ago, which I loved, and I keep dipping into. I love books you can just dip into. And it's a book by Richard Reed, who is one of the founders of Innocent Smoothies. Do you have Innocent Smoothies there?
No, I don't think so.
Amazing brand, fab brand. I love this brand, Innocent Smoothies. They're a smoothie brand, obviously. the whole story behind how they all started and everything else is brilliant. Anyhow, he's got this book called If I Could Tell You Just One Thing. Okay?
Yeah.
And it actually was, I think it was his dad, I can't remember. I think it was his dad said to him, when you meet people, you know, that have got experience, or you meet people in life, always finish every conversation with them and say, could you just do me a favor? If you could tell me just one thing, what would it be? If you could just give me one tip, one bit of advice, like you're asking me now, if you could just tell me one thing, what would it be? So he started doing this. And then, of course, with the success of Innocent Smoothies, he's become very, very successful. And, of course, now he mixes in a different environment and meets some very successful people. But he carried it on. He said, I just always do it. Whenever I meet anybody, I always, after a conversation, just say, if you could just tell me one thing, what would it be? And then he decided to write a book. And he just basically has listed in this book loads of different people that he's met and their answers. And it sort of each person maybe has a page or a couple of pages on what they've told them and what they've said. Brilliant book. Absolutely brilliant book. Very easy read. Dip in, dip out. Couldn't recommend it enough.
All right. I'm going to put the link to that book and some of those other resources and people that you've mentioned in the show notes of this episode. So before we part ways from miles across the earth from each other, please tell us where can people find you, stalk you on socials and your www.
Socials, okay, there's two options. You've got me, so you'll find me on whatever is your poison, Alan Austin Smith, just altogether, all one word. You'll find Alan Austin Smith, you know, if you just put that into whatever, you'll find me. But also The Fantastic Hairdresser. So if you, we've always got two, effectively, you've got the brand, The Fantastic Hairdresser, and then you've got me. So either or both of those will get you anything you want. We're pretty active in putting great stuff up there, content, different things. We've got a blog, which you'll find from our website and so on. Then you've got our website, which is thefantastichairdresser, all one word, .com.
Awesome. So
that anything you'll find there, all the different things that we get up to and whatever, and say the blog's worth subscribing to, because again, we do a lot of good stuff on there too.
Well, look, thank you again so much for spending your time. It's nice to connect with you. We first met in 2006 on a bus the Global Salon Business Awards in London,
It was. We were on the way. I'll tell you where we were on. We were on the way to the Houses of Parliament.
We were. What a good memory. Yes, indeed, we were. It was a fantastic.
I sat next to you.
We did, and we chatted.
On one side, I remember you sat one side of the aisle, and I sat on the other side of the aisle, and we chatted.
We did.
I always remember you, beautiful woman, Julia Ressa.
You're so kind. Look, thank you for spending some time with me yet again. I really do appreciate it, and you always have so much gold to share with us, so I really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure. I've enjoyed it. And I'm going to go back and have my tea, and you're going to have your breakfast.
Indeed, that's right. We shall talk again.
All right, take care, Larissa.
Okay, so I could talk to that guy all day, but that is it for today. Thank you so much, Alan, for joining me. I think that his perspective on the salon industry as a whole is so refreshing and forward-thinking. I love it, especially from someone with such experience and knowledge from within the industry. Attracting and keeping new staff members is a problem faced by almost every salon owner. I think it's so important to keep in mind what Alan said about the industry as ever-changing, because it really is. It's easy to fall into the habit of comparing your own journey when you started off as a young stylist to today. But in reality, it's just really won't do you any favors. It is not the same. Stop trying to pretend that it is, or stop trying to force it to be the way that it was. It is no longer. Our job is to start thinking differently about how we do things and be aware of the kind of competition we're up against. I loved his comparison between passion, falling in love, because the two really are so similar. We have to step up first. You'd never fall in love with someone who expected it or demanded it, would you? I wouldn't. No, because you have to earn love by sparking your interest and engaging you. And it's exactly the same when it comes to passion for a job. So thanks again, Alan, for joining me this week. And thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to check out his links. I'll put them in the show notes on www.salonownerscollective.com/episodes. You'll find it there. Come and join me in the Salon Owners Collective group. It's held on Facebook, and I'll pop the link in the show notes as well. I really look forward to bringing you next week's episode. Chat to you then.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Salon Owners Collective podcast. Tune in each week as we reveal the latest insight and advice on what it takes to make your salon a success today. Subscribe to the Salon Owners Collective podcast on iTunes, or visit us online at salonownerscollective.com for answers to your common questions, to follow Larissa, and much more. Thanks for listening. See you next time.